Yo, my dudes, we need to talk about Lake Placid today and Betty White as leader of the Crocs. Crocodiles and Lake Placid and mine. Retreated. Okay, I guess I don't have to sneeze. Guys, this is probably one of the top five things that I say a lot, but I fucking love this movie. I still love it. If I'm being hundy pee honest, I don't think I love it as much as I did when I first watched it. It came out in 1999, so I was 9 years old. I don't know if I saw it at the time of its release or sometime after, but regardless, I thought it was real exciting at that young age. And while I think it's still kind of exciting, it's not, for what it is, it's not as, it's not as, just giving me as much of a thrill, but I don't even know if it really did when I was younger. I don't find this movie scary. Guys, it's a creature film. I love calling it that. It's a creature film. Creature croc. Probably gonna call it that now. Creature of the Crocs. Creature feature. It's a comedy horror film. I don't know. I guess it brings more of the comedy to me than the horror and thrill part of it. But it's still a lot of fun. It just, you have to be able to appreciate it for what it is. And honestly, right off the bat, guys, if you cannot suspend your reality for this film, then it's just not for you. If you can't get down with the fact that the what would be the world's largest recorded crocodile in history has somehow ended up in Maine in a lake, then this one isn't for you. I am going to go into some croc facts, so we'll learn some more about the crocodiles. And I'm really not going to harp too much on the suspending of the reality thing with this film, because honestly, like I just said, if you know that that's just not something you're going to be able to do, I just don't think this movie is going to be for you, and that's really okay. It's probably not something you're going to enjoy and just find yourself irritated with and maybe have that reaction of, like, that was a waste of time. So, you know, if you look at the synopsis, listen to part of what I'm spewing, and you think it's not for you, that's totally okay. I'll see you next time. You know, all those things. I said I wasn't going to harp, and I harped. But for serious, I'm just going to talk about this film, recap it, and discuss it. Well, the recap part, without keeping on going back to the unrealisticness of it, because the whole thing is just, from my understanding and what I was trying to read about it, the whole thing is just unrealistic. Again, that's why it's a creature feature. It's kind of the whole point of the movie. So if you're looking for realistic, this ain't it. But it's fun. I don't know what it is about crocodiles, alligators, but I really like those guys. I've had a bit of a infatuation with them for a little while. In fact, I even have a giant stuffed alligator. Although, I think it's actually supposed to be the crocodile from Peter Pan, because it's got those cartoon googly eyes on its noggin there. And it does resemble very closely the gator from Peter Pan, the Disney cartoon. Animated version. I'm not sure how many animated versions there might be of Peter Pan. A lot of different renditions. Okay, quick side note. The Millennial Rewatcher is not my first time a podcasting. I used to do a podcast that it started as One Does, and then the name eventually changed to Top Shelf Murder. Now I feel like that name's a lot more insensitive than I realized at the time. I don't know. There's something about saying it out loud just now that I didn't like. So I would give a book recommendation, and then I would tie the book recommendation into either a paranormal story, true crime, weird history, crazy facts, historical facts. Like I did the history of the plague doctor mask once, and then I did a little bit on the Black Plague in that episode. And that I really enjoyed that episode because that was something the whole thing I found fascinating. But I had started to put together an episode on J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan, and that backstory is fascinating. You know what? There was a rendition, a play on Peter Pan called Finding Neverland with Johnny Depp, but I believe Kate Winslet was also in it. And I really loved that film whenever it came out. I don't remember it very well, so therefore I'm like, I'm not really sure exactly what endeared me to that film and that rendition of Peter Pan, but that could be fun to potentially revisit and then give a little backstory on J.M. Barrie, because it's a doozy and it's fascinating. So I don't know. That's something you're interested in. You can let me know. MillenniaRewatcher@gmail.com. That's not right. I thought I was so smooth there and I fucked it up right at the end because Gmail podcast is not it. MillenniaRewatcher@gmail.com. Anyways, all right, let's move out of my, I don't even know, ADHD blabbing side quests and get into Lake Placid. As I already said, it came out in 1999 on the cusp of the millennia. It was directed by Steve Miner, written by David E. Kelly, and produced by David E. Kelly, Michael Pressman, and Peter Bogart. So I just wanted to address the name of the movie before we get into the whole ass fucking thing, because the town in the movie is fictional and they call the lake Black Lake. So they're fictionally in the movie in Black Lake, Maine. In the beginning of the movie, the sheriff says to that he's on the lake with...
What's with the water? It's so black. There's no waves or anything.
Well, they wanted to call it Lake Placid, but somebody said that name was taken.
They wanted to call it Lake Placid, but that name was taken. So there is a lake in New York called Lake Placid. And when I was watching Cool Runnings and doing my notes for that episode, there's a bit of a reference to Lake Placid when they go to meet Irv at the bar he frequents. If you haven't watched that episode or not familiar with the movie, this won't make sense. But, you know, here we are anyway. So there's a reference to Lake Placid in the movie. We see it on a Lake Placid Olympics poster that Irv ends up actually tearing down in that scene. But Lake Placid in New York, it had made a bid for being the location for the Olympic Winter Games in 1932, and they were ultimately chosen to host. Then the actual, you know, real-life Jamaican bobsled team, they, pretty sure I also referenced this in the episode, but if I didn't, sorry. The real team, they spent some time practicing at Lake Placid in New York a couple of times, I believe. So I just was like, a little tie-in, little fact crossover. I just wanted to point it out and also explain the title of the fucking movie, which isn't actually the name of the lake in the movie. So the film was actually mostly filmed, I said that's a weird ass way, in British Columbia, Canada. The movie's croc is based off the prehistoric Sarcosuchus Imperator. I just practiced saying that so many times, so I hope I got it. Translated to Flesh Crocodile Emperor, which I'm just fucking obsessed with. It lived 110 million years ago. When there are rivers flowing through the now sub-Saharan Africa. So essentially, you're not going to find a crocodile in Maine. From my research, I think you'd be more likely, which you're still not likely, but more likely to see an alligator in that type of water. But still, I'm just trying to establish, like, we know that the creature croc in Lake Placid is not realistic. So this is for funsies. The crocodile in the film, it's supposed to be 30 feet long, and the largest recorded croc, in captivity at least, measured 20 feet and 3 inches. So before we get into some crocodile fix, there are a little bit of some references to the horror classic Alligator, which came out in 1980. I have not seen that, but between crocs and alligators, I don't know what it is, but I got a thing for the gators. So I'm gonna have to find this movie and watch it. But one other reference is in Lake Placid to alligator is a scene in Alligator when Robert Forster jokes about a gator victim having a pretty small casket when they only found his big toe. You see this quip, I guess, played out in Lake Placid when Oliver Platt's character asks Sheriff Hank if a toe they discovered is the man that was killed. And Hank replies,
"You seemed taller."
He seemed taller. I love that. I do love that interaction. The relationship, or lack thereof, between Sheriff Hank, who is played by Brendan Gleeson, and Hector, who is played by Oliver Platt, is... honestly, I love it, because I will get into it. You know what? I'm going to save that. I'm going to go into like a whole thing, so I'm going to save that. But I love it, and I'll explain more later. All right, let's dive into some crocodile fix. Okay, before I do my little dive of crocs, we all know I struggle with pronouncing things, so I'm gonna do my best. I'm sure I'm probably gonna mess up a couple things here or there, trying to tell you about dinosaur things and such that are just words that don't get along with my brain. Crocodiles are the largest and the heaviest of present-day reptiles. Crocodiles are a living link with the dinosaur-like reptiles of prehistoric times and are the nearest living relatives of the birds. I find that so fucking fascinating. I need to know more, but I don't know if you guys want to learn about that link with me, so it's going to be an individual experience, but there's something about it I'm just like, ah, that's wild, and I like it. So about 100 million years ago, during the Mesozoic era, the Crocodilia order included some of the top animals in the food chain. Crocodilia. I need to name something that. Anyway, so today, crocs are found in tropical regions such as Africa, Asia, Australia, and part of America, like Florida. They normally live near lakes, rivers, wetlands, and even some saltwater regions. So only one of the four suborders of crocodiles have survived to modern times of today. The order Crocodilia includes the tree crocodiles, alligators, caimans, and gavials. Gavials? Dinosaurs and crocs, they both belong to a reptile subclass known as archosaurs. Again, these names are so good. Which first appeared in the fossil record about 250 million years ago during the Triassic period. By the end of the Triassic period, archosaur evolution split into two paths. One branch of archosaurs evolved into the oldest relatives of crocodiles and alligators. And Ziada evolved into dinosaurs, birds, and flying reptiles. So about 66 million years ago, at the end of the Cretaceous period, a mass extinction wiped the non-avian dinosaurs and flying reptiles off the planet. And today, crocodilians and birds are the only surviving archosaurs. I feel like a geek, and I'm so here for it. This stuff is cool. All right, so let's just go into some more like basic croc day-to-day facts. Maybe not day-to-day, but anyways. Crocodiles lay an average of 12 to 48 eggs at a time. Okay. The hatchlings stay in their eggs for 55 to 100 days. The sex of each crocodile, bebe, depends on the temperature of its egg during a critical moment during the first half of its incubation period. Crocodiles live in tropical climates because they are cold-blooded and they cannot generate their own heat. So listen, if this croc was living out in Maine in the winter, bitch, no, nah, it'd freeze to death, I would assume. That's what I'm gathering. During colder months, they enter a hibernation-like state of inactivity known as I don't know how to say that. That's funny. Let's figure it out. Known as estivation, which involves slowing down all its bodily processes. Crocodiles also estivate during long periods of drought. To create a place to hibernate, they dig out a burrow in the side of a riverbank or lake, and they settle in for a long sleep. Tease. Croc nap time, everyone, sleep. If a croc loses a tooth, it just replaces itself. It's like, hey, bitch. Got you. Here's another. They can go through 8,000 teeth over a lifetime. If I'm being real honest, teeth freak me out. You ever seen one of those x-rays of the two rows of teeth? So it's a kid. It's a kid face with their baby teeth coming out. And then the adult teeth underneath it. I hate it. I wish I could take that from my brain. No! Crocodiles, they also don't sweat. Okay, the way that they release heat, it just reminds me of a dog, and I kind of love this as well. Because, okay, I know that they're dangerous, and I would never actually try to approach one in the wild. If there's something that moves my brain to equate them to the likeness of a domesticated dog, I might be a little more stupid one day, because I think it's my friend then. So, somebody stop me! Anyways, crocodiles, yeah, they don't sweat. Not necessarily. To keep cool, they open their mouths in a process called mouth gaping, which is a lot like panting. So something else I was reading was saying, if you ever see a gator just on the shore with its mouth already wide open like that, it's typically not a sign of threat or aggression. It's just letting out some heat from its mouth. So it just lays there, its mouth wide open. All right, everyone knows the term crocodile tears, right? It refers to a person expressing insincere remorse, fake tears. They're forcing themselves to cry. I guess you could probably interpret it a few different ways, but they're all kind of along that baseline, right? So it's a thing that goes back to about the 16th century. Crocodiles, they do in fact produce tears. Their lacrimal glands secrete a fluid behind their third eyelid called a nictitating membrane. If I mispronounced that, I'm sorry. The fluid helps keep the eye clean, lubricated, and reduce bacteria. Crocodile tears aren't usually noticeable once the croc has been out of the water for a while and its eyes begin to dry out. I also read something else that said when a crocodile is feeding, it might appear to be crying in the process, which is another allusion to the term crocodile tears, because what they're doing actually pleases them. They just happen to be crying at the same time. Crying in a sense. I mean, bitch, they be fine. They're not sad for their prey. They lack their dinner. A crocodile's jaw can apply about 3,700 pounds of pressure per square inch. And that is according to National Geographic. Again, all of my sources would be listed in the show notes. So this means they can bite through a human arm or a leg. No problems to be found. For comparison, a human jaw produces only about 100 pounds pressure per square inch. The crocodile jaw has very little opening strength. A crocodile's mouth can be held shut with just a rubber band. For such an intimidating creature, that fact as well reduces a little bit of fear. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I have no business getting close to a crocodile enough to put a rubber band around its head. So anyways, they also have really good hearing. So good, in fact, that they can hear their babies calling from inside their eggs. Mommy, daddy, is that you? The other crocs and I would like to come out now. We're ready for human feasting. Crocodiles are very fast swimmers, which helps them catch their prey. I mean, duh, but you know. Stating the obvious, Megan. They can swim up to 18 miles per hour, 18 miles per hour, not outer, or 29 kilometers, and hold their breath underwater for around 1 hour. Crocodiles aren't as fast on land, where they can only run up to about 11 miles per hour or 18 kilometers for a short distance. I mean, that's better than me. Listen, if a croc's chasing me on land, I'm probably going to be done. I'll probably have an asthma attack, to be honest. Okay, so I just wanted to give just a quick little blurb on how alligators are different from crocodiles, because this is something I forget quite often. Even though I love me an alligator. But anyways, let's just share that real quick. So how are alligators and crocodiles different? An alligator's jaw is U-shaped, while a crocodile's is V-shaped. A crocodile's teeth stick up over their upper lip when their mouths are closed, and alligator's teeth, they don't do that. So that's a pretty distinct indication that this be croc or this be gator. Another difference between the two is that crocs have salt glands on their tongues. These modified salivary glands help crocs tolerate life in saltwater. Alligators and caimans have lost the ability to secrete excess salt through the tongue glands and therefore prefer to live in freshwater areas. Alrighty, need a sip of my water before we carry on to the actual movie. Da-na-na-na. That's a draw, isn't it? For our cast, I'm just going over the main players like I usually do. I'm not going to name all the names. I'm sorry. Maybe I should. I don't know. But just anyways, Bill Pullman, he plays Jack Wells, who is a fish and wildlife officer. Bridget Fonda, she plays Kelly Scott, who is a paleontologist. If you were also wondering, like I was, she is related to Jane Fonda. Jane Fonda is her aunt. Oliver Platt plays Hector. I love Oliver Platt. Brendan Gleeson plays Sheriff Hank. And Betty White plays Mrs. Dolores Bickerman. I'm just going to state it one more time. Last chance. First things first. This movie is basically begging you to suspend your reality. So if you can't, then this movie's not for you. Secondly, Betty White as Dolores Bickerman is the best part of this fucking movie. Fight me on it. Okay, I mean, and probably Oliver Platt as well. He does have some hilarious lines. Like, okay. In a conversation between him and Kelly, Hector says,
"She told you that we had sex together? So vigorous."
Kelly says,
"I never had sex with you."
And Hector says,
"I'm horrible in bed. They never remember."
Okay, and on one hand, it's annoying as fuck that he's immediately just being like, "Oh, I slept with her," and he didn't. The quip in response, "I'm horrible in bed. They never remember." Also, in the opening scene, you know, there's some credits flying through the name of the movie. It's flying over, well, what's supposed to be Black Lake, Maine, but they actually shot in Canada. They don't list Betty White's name in the opening credits. And I was like, bitch, how the fuck are you going to do Betty like that? Also, she's probably one of the, to me, the best part of this movie. She's fucking hilarious. And she's our villain alongside the croc. She's our villain. I wish there was, she had more screen time in this movie, to be honest. Okay, so beginning of this movie, we meet Sheriff Hank and a diver from Fish and Wildlife. Not Jack, not Bill Pullman's character yet. Different guy. Didn't catch his name. Sorry. That's a bunch of sound real insensitive when I tell you what happens to him. So yeah, he's out on Black Lake. A Fish and Wildlife dude is about to conduct a search under the sheriff's guide and I guess sort of supervision, more like help. But anyways, so the diver, he goes under and he's under the water for a little bit while Sheriff Hank, who doesn't want to fucking be there, he looks cranky as shit. He's just chilling and eating a Twinkie, listening to
I'm sleeping and right in the middle of a good dream. Like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you.
It's spooky croc-ooky under the water. The diver finds what I believe is a nest. He kind of pokes. He finds the nest, but then he goes, he pokes his head back out from, you know, where he had like swam up into to get to the nest and checks his surroundings. I think he thought he might have heard something. I don't know exactly how that would work underwater. But anyways, it's just a fucking turtle. It was a cute turtle. He feels like he's safe enough to go back up into this nest. He's not. So he gets attacked. He makes it to the surface of the water somehow, even though he's still being just like flung about like a little diver rag doll by our creature. They don't know it's a crocodile yet. It's this mysterious thing in the water. No one's actually had a solid sighting of it yet. He comes out of the water screaming, scares the shit out of Sheriff Hank and his fucking Twinkie. The attack goes on for a little bit, and then he pops out of the water again right at the boat. So this is where Hank pulls him into the boat, but it turns out the diver's bottom half is gone. His legs be gone, and it's grisly. Cut to, real quick actually, Bridget Fonda's character, Kelly, a paleontologist. She works at a museum in New York. The scenes cut really quickly. It almost kind of throws me just a little bit, but I mean, it's okay. Basically, in this scene, she gets called to her boss's office. His name is Kevin. We don't like Kevin. I don't understand why she even liked Kevin, who she was dating, but he breaks up with her. At work, this guy, the fucking entitlement that he's just throwing around this place with his dick. So he breaks up with her. She's standing there like panting, breathing super, super heavily. And then another coworker, another woman, comes in to see if she's okay, comfort her.
What are you doing?
I'm meditating.
Meditating?
Yes, to relieve stress. Myra, you're the one who taught me all about breathing.
Yes, but you're doing Lamaze and you're giving birth.
She definitely comes into the room as if she knew to come to that part of the building at that time, like Kelly was going to be upset, which she probably did know because she is also the woman that Kelly's boss, Kevin, broke up with her for. Also, she's played by Mariska Hargitay. I almost didn't recognize her. I had to stop and be like, wait a minute, is that? Yes. Yes, it is. And she's playing the other woman. You want to be mad at her character in this scene because she is kind of shitty and slimy to Kelly. But the person I'm really fucking mad at is Kevin, their boss, who, listen, I know everyone has different opinions and feelings. And I think it might also depend on the workplace and the environment. I know there's lots of different factors, but I guess I haven't heard of too many real life scenarios where dating in the workplace went okay. Yeah, at least when you're not like directly working with one another, which it seems like they all did. This boss man's, he feels entitled enough to dick his way through his staff and of course seems to be getting away with it like it's part of his fucking job, to be honest. That's how he seems to treat it. Like, his romantic relationships have every right to be taking place in the workplace with the people that work underneath him. He's their boss. So Mariska Hargitay's character, she comes in as the other woman. I'm sure Kevin was probably like, you should probably go comfort her in her time of need. So she's been given the job of faux comforting Kelly and almost instantly confesses to her that she is the new dicked down staff member that Kevin has broken up with Kelly for, and says,
the heart wants what the heart wants.
When people say that, do they genuinely believe that that is a okay explanation? To me, it's a very immature and irresponsible thing to say, because it's basically saying that you don't feel like you need to take any account for your actions and how they might affect other people. Anyways, Mariska, that's all we see of her, so bye.
Thank you so much.
We get a quick scene back at the lake where we're introduced to Bill Pullman's character, Jack. Okay, so when I was taking my notes for the movie, I'll have to go back when I'm kind of refining my notes, typing them up, and add in the actual character's name, because I usually will miss the character's names while I'm watching the film. And even though I'd seen it before, it'd been a long ass time. Whatever. So I was writing his name as Bill, and I started calling him Fish Bill. And then by the end of the movie, when I was like, oh, his name's Jack, literally like the last 10 minutes or so, I was like, oh, his name's Jack. And I just started writing Jack Fish Bill. So for a lot of this, I might refer to him as Jack Fish Bill. I'll probably end up just calling him Jack, but I like the name Jack Fish Bill. I like how I just tacked on Jack to Fish Bill. Bill Pullman. We are back with Kelly, who looks big upset. She's still at work. Slime boss guy Kev comes in. She's snarky as hell. Listen, Kelly, she may fucking hate being in the woods.
I'm allergic to timber.
She's constantly terrified of getting a mosquito bite.
Mosquitoes, I got a thing about mosquitoes.
She has a thing about ticks.
I get ticks, I know it. She's so drawn to me. I got a thing about ticks.
She don't sleep in tents. She is not afraid to exclaim how much she hates all of that kind of stuff, which seems to annoy a lot of people, whatever. But she is not afraid to tell you off. Even though I think it was a mistake to date her boss, I'm not blaming her or her character for it. We all make fucking mistakes. But I'm glad that she does in a way stand up for herself to an extent. So anyways, slime boss guy Kev comes in and he explains about the unknown animal attack in Maine, Black Lake, and the dead diver, and the fact that a shard of a tooth was found in the cadaver, and he wants her to go inspect it. And she instantly is like, the fuck? I don't do field work. That makes no sense. Why would you send me there? Blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, oh, you just want to get rid of me. You and your new dick down employee want to get rid of the bad energy, well, their perception of what is bad energy in the space of work, where she still has to go to fucking work, but now she's grieving and she's mad. I'd be pissed too. I don't know, I would leave. I'd be like, bitch, this counts as a long holiday. I'll be back when I feel like it. But he can't just tell her to take a vacation. So he sends her on this unnecessary expedition, because he's very persistent that she has to go. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, she does end up going. And it does become clear that she concedes in going because she does actually want to get away. Again, I feel like this could have been accomplished in saying, well, now I'm going to take some vacation time and it will be paid. And Sir Boss Slime Kev, if you don't agree to these terms, then I'll go to HR. I don't know. Again, it's a movie, so this is how the plotline works out, and I'm probably just thinking about it too much, but here we are. Off Kelly goes to Maine and the tooth. Kelly inspects the tooth after griping about being there and no one giving her a warm welcome. Her character is very quickly established as the overreactive, dramatic woman who is somehow a pain in the ass for not liking camping and bugs and dead bodies, and feels like it just very much feels like they're pushing the hysterical woman trope with her character, that she's just like overreactive and way over dramatic, as if these are super negative things. To one extent, I can agree that when you're in that environment and that's something that you're gonna have to be surrounded by for a few days, she does do a lot of complaining. That does get old. I understand that. But at the same time, they seem to be immediately judging her off her disdain for outdoorsy things and immediately judge her as an incapable, weak woman from New York City that might have a sharp mouth but isn't worth for much anything else. And I don't like this trope because it's very stereotypical and gender leaning in its bias, and I don't like it. I'm not fucking here for it. Sheriff Hank, he seems he is super annoyed by her being there. And honestly, I think it's just, again, more so because she doesn't present herself in a way that's easy for him to understand or digest. So he's just an asshole. Everyone treats her like this. Honestly, at the end of it all, I don't know how much her character truly was helpful to the entire situation, at least on scene. I feel like it's kind of one of those things that, like, yeah, she shouldn't have been there, but her character's, you know, adding to the plot. So I do think she was right when she said her expertise could have just been given from New York. The field work wasn't totally necessary. Hank is griping and asking about why the museum would even send her. So after Kelly inspects the tooth, she says it isn't a fossil and it is reptilian. She asks to see the body. She's asking some more questions about the attack in the lake. I mean, she's definitely very queasy. She appears to feel very, very uncomfortable with her surroundings, but she does seem to be trying. So there's that. And then she asks to go to the lake. Again, Hank is griping and asking why the museum would even send her here to Black Lake, Maine. As they're loading up some stuff in his sheriff rig, I don't know what to call it, Jackfish Bill pulls up. They are introduced, and now Jackfish Bill goes in on Kelly with the whole "a little lady like you doesn't belong out here" bullshit.
Ma'am, look, this isn't some kind of fact-finding expedition.
Yes, I know that.
It's not a science trip.
Could you be a little more condescending? Because I'm not real great with subtlety.
Just immediately judging her, not giving her a chance, really. They want to get rid of her, but Kelly continues to tell them off. At the lake, they go to the one house on this big-ass lake to ask questions of the people that are supposed to live there. And so they're expecting a couple, but when they get there, the only person they find is Betty White, or Dolores Bickerman, but I might just keep calling her Betty. I'm sorry. I know I should refer to her as her character's name in the movie, but I love Betty White. Sheriff Hank is like, where's your husband? At first she says, oh, he died a couple years ago or something like that. And Sheriff Hank immediately says, there's no record of that, as if he would just be able to recall that off the top of his fucking head. I don't know how small this town is. I guess it is pretty small. Memory doesn't always serve, okay? But anyways, after he says that, she admits to killing him.
You killed him?
Oh, yes.
And how would you have accomplished this, ma'am?
Well, he was very sick, and he refused to go to a doctor. He'd be coherent one day and incoherent the next. And, well, one coherent day, he asked me to end his suffering. And he had kept insisting, and, well, finally, I just gave in. And I hit him on the head with a skillet, and then buried him under the bulkhead. Well, dig him up if you don't believe me, Sherlock.
She's so unapologetic, very matter of fact, defensive, but also it's Betty White as a little lakeside, tiny farm having husband killing villain. And I fucking love it. They're boating back to the campsite, bickering as fuck, especially because this is where Kelly learns that they're going to be camping, which I mean, they do even say in the scene, they literally said camping. And she's like, I thought camping meant the Ramada Inn or...
Tents are sent ahead. Should already be set up by the time we get there.
Tents? We're staying in tents?
I told you, 2 days we'd have to camp.
Yes, camp. But I thought that meant Ramada Inn. I never heard tents. God. Will there be toilets?
Maybe we should just take you back.
Why? Because I prefer a toilet?
Oh, God, we forgot to pack the feminine napkins.
Oh, so you're with him now. Are you taking his side?
I didn't say a word.
Oh, no. Well, no, maybe I should just wipe myself with some leafy little piece of poison oak, and then I could spend the whole day scratching my ass, blending in with the natives. Then you'd be back on my side.
You know, you really don't have to bother telling people you're from New York.
This is one of the scenes where I'm like, oh, Kelly, okay. But at the same time, the way she speaks, she is very overdramatic, but it does kind of remind me of myself. And sometimes I'll say things that I know are overdramatic and also just kind of maybe sometimes don't even make a ton of sense. But it's because it's my humor. I will be overdramatic about a situation that maybe I'm not super happy with, but I'll express it in almost like sometimes a self-deprecating humor or just, I don't know, some sort of humorous way, but I'm being snarky and probably bitchy and over the top, but I'm also aware of it. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but sometimes the way Kelly says stuff kind of reminds me of that. So maybe that's why her character is easier for me to not take so seriously when she's saying that kind of stuff about, I thought we'd be at the Ramada Inn. I mean, she's a total smart ass to the core. And I love it. I don't mind that. Can it be hard to be around? Yeah. But I think that's just where knowing when to read the room and trying to pull yourself back, or fully listening when someone's like, you're being a little too much right now, or something like that, and being like, oh shit, sorry, you know, pull it back, apologize if you need to, and move on. It's fine. So yeah, they're boating back to the campsite, bickering, because listen, at the same time, the men, they don't work well together pretty much almost the entire time. They're constantly butting heads, just annoying one another, tossing their egos around, thinking ego first. They're ego tossing, flaccid dick swinging, nonsense abundant. And that's what's happening in the boat when Hank, Sheriff Hunk, he spots some antlers floating in the water. So they go up to it. Hank, he grabs hold of the antlers on one side, he yanks it out of the water, and it's a giant moose head that's just, it's been severed, and it's big and heavy. So it does make sense that when he lifts it out of the water, bitch, it's heavy. I don't think he means to. He doesn't mean to, but he kind of ends up tossing it at the feet of Kelly, who's, you know, splashed a little bit with moose head goo and lake water, and she slaps him.
You threw it at me!
I just let go of it!
You threw it at me! Do you see that?
Yep, she straight up slaps him twice, actually.
Oh!
Ma'am!
Stop hitting me!
Don't throw heads at me!
Ma'am, it's
stop calling
fault.
Me ma'am!
Was this an overreaction? Yes. Do I love it? Also, yes. They get to their campsite and Jack is questioning Kelly again on why she's there. Honestly, fuck him. He just seems to be annoyed with her presence, and they don't want to deal with her. And I don't know. I guess as I'm saying that out loud, I guess I can't. I don't not understand that. It just, they're also just like not giving her a chance at all or being helpful in the slightest to maybe help her acclimate a little bit better to their surroundings for the next couple days. At the end of the day, her knowledge is fucking valuable, okay? She's a fucking paleontologist. This is happening, and this is when we meet Hector. He makes his grand entrance.
Who are you?
Hector Sear. I said it once. Let me know when it sinks in, okay? Have you seen it, mister?
No.
Excuse me. You came here to help you find it.
A crocodile.
Yeah. They've been migrating north, you know. This lake does connect to the ocean. It's not as far-fetched as it may sound.
Crocodiles can't swim in salt water.
Yeah, well, that'll be your little secret.
So Hector is a mythology professor with a special interest in crocodiles. Basically, he chased them to study them. Again, he's played by Oliver Platt. I fucking love Oliver Platt. I do adore. Sir Oliver Platt, I adore you. I find him endearing in general. I think he's handsome. He's funny. I love what he brings to the characters he plays. There's just something about Oliver Platt that I feel drawn to this dude, the characters he plays. Yeah, Hector, the character he plays in this movie, he's in love with the chase of the croc. Basically, everyone is sexist as fuck in this movie, and it just keeps regurgitating itself while they're all ego tossing, butting heads with one another. Hector, and he doesn't like, I think this is just how he is, but he doesn't start off great with his introductions and his arrival. He carries himself with a lot of authority, like esteemed authority. Unfortunately, I think a lot of that is self-given. He shows up, he's doing his Hector, everyone hates me because blah thing, but he initiates his investigation pretty like immediately. So the four of them set out in canoes, that being Hank and Kelly in one canoe and Jack and Hector in another. So Hector, he's using his little sonar croc tracing gadgets to search the water, and this is where Kelly and Hank's canoe gets bitch flipped. So at this point, they still aren't a hundy aren't 100% sure if it's a crocodile. Hector showing up, as Kelly says,
Siri must think you've got one.
And he's there to find out, is this a crocodile? So they still haven't actually seen the creature, and there's still a lot of speculation and also disbelief happening because they're like, how the fuck could a crocodile be here? Hector explains he doesn't really think it's actually that far-fetched because that lake does connect to an outlet, I'm not sure the correct terms to use for that, to the ocean. I guess in a perfect situation, a croc could have traveled up from those ways and settled on the water. But again, there's the temperature issue and freshwater and saltwater thing. And anyways.
How is it a person could come to believe a crocodile is in New England? How could it survive winter?
As long as their nostrils don't freeze, they survive. Am I foolish to explain things? He had such trouble with my name.
Hey.
Hector.
So the canoe, again, it gets bitch flipped. But no one's hurt. They still don't see the crocodile. They make it back to the campsite. And Kelly wants out. So she's on her cell phone back at the campsite. She calls the museum. Fuckwad Kev insists that she stay.
I am a paleontologist. I work for a natural history museum. I am not some...
I don't believe her.
Thank you. It's so rewarding to imagine my tax dollar finding its way to you, you fuck shit.
The guys, they're all overhearing this conversation that she's having. And then Hector, the look on his face, I fucking love it because he's like entranced by her and the way she verbalizes herself and assaults people with her words. And Hector, he calls her...
You are a saucy flirt.
A saucy flirt. I hope to use that phrase for the rest of my life. Oh, you saucy flirt. It feels like something Austin Powers would say, and I'm here for it.
Oh, behave.
Right after this, we get the toe scene. So this was, I was telling you guys, there's a bit of an homage to the creature feature alligator from 1980. And this is it. They find a toe, a rotting toe by the lake's edge. Hector, he's looking at it and he's like, yep, it's definitely been swallowed and then regurgitated. He picks it up, bare hands, and holds it up to Sheriff Hank and says,
is this the man who was killed? He seemed tar.
Listen, I hate Hector, but I love him. And I guess this is probably a good point to... Sorry, I bumped my desk. To go back to what I was starting to allude to at the beginning of the episode before I even got to the fucking movie, that I have an adoration for the fucked up relationship that is between Sheriff Hank and Hector, because they seem to really, really dislike each other and just are constantly going back and forth. There's this one scene where... Sheriff Hank, he gets caught in one of Hector's many gator traps, and they had just had a heated conversation, and Hank tries to walk away, but his ankle immediately gets snagged in one of these traps that then suspends him hanging upside down from a tree. Jack and Kelly eventually see this and they come over, but so when the camera turns back to Hank swinging from this tree limb and Hector's trap, and Hector's just standing there in front of him, and they're not, both of them are not speaking.
I could probably cut him down, but there's this odd look of mayhem on his upside down face.
Hank?
Yes?
Are you all right?
Could you cut me down?
Do you promise that you won't attempt to injure me?
I have no interest in ever looking at you, Hector.
Okay.
Hector looks like he's afraid to make a move, and Hank... the stare of death, the unblinking stare of death that he is just boring into Hector is saying, when I get down from here, I'm gonna fucking kill you. Anyways, when he does, he chases.
All right, it's over. It's over. Remember, you promised not to hurt him, so.
I lied.
Hey, come on.
Wait.
Hold on.
You know where to go, my friend.
It's so funny. But anyways, then there's also a scene of these two after some of the more dramatic croc things have happened, where Hector is showing Sheriff Hank some videos, like I think field videos that he had taken from his expeditions and such, of a crocodile coming onto land and attacking animals. In this moment, they seem to kind of almost be bonding a little bit over what Hector does, because Sheriff Hank, he seems to be getting more of an understanding about what Hector is actually all about and does. And anyways, my point with saying all that is to say that they do sort of have this evolution of a friendship by the end of the movie, and it's hilariously good. Annoying at points in some of the context, but still hilariously good. I would watch just for these two. And Betty. Of course Betty, but also just for these two. So speaking of Hector's croc traps, later that night after they find the toe, dead man's toe. I just watched Hocus Pocus yesterday and I was dying because I don't know how I missed the fact that in the beginning of that movie where Mary Sanderson and Sarah Sanderson, you know, the Sanderson sisters, they're trying to make their potion to feed to the child to get its life force. And they needed a dead man's toe for an ingredient. So they just have this bowl of fucking dead man's toes. And I never noticed that it was a bowl full of dead man's toes. And then Mary and Sarah, they're always fucking around, kind of, right? So they end up throwing toes back and forth at one another, and then one of them hits Winnie in the back, and I had just never noticed. I was like, oh, she gets smacked with a fucking toe. Dead man's toe. Anyway, sorry, that was a side quest, but now we're back to Lake Placid and the Crocs. So Hector, it's nighttime and Sheriff Hank gets up to, I don't know, use the bathroom or something. And he finds some of his deputies digging holes and they say that Hector has hired them to dig holes. And then Hank is like, what the actual fuck? And he's so irritated by Hector. He goes into Hector's tent and there's loud music playing and there's a bunch of other deputies partying and they're drinking and they're letting loose. And Hector's dancing with one of the women deputies.
Law enforcement is very dangerous work, isn't it? And you have such big, wonderful boobs.
Thank you. Hector explains that they're letting loose, they're having a good time, but also crocodiles are attracted to the sound and it could lure them to land. And he wants to try to trap, if it is a crocodile, because at this point they don't have their confirmation just yet, they will soon, then it might lure them to the land. And he's doing all this to set his croc traps, but his croc catching party, I mean, essentially it all, if it happens to double as Hector catches sex with a deputy as well, it's just a bonus he won't say no to. And Sheriff Hank is so fucking mad at him.
Hey. You're an official business. This is not a party.
Yeah, but now that you're here.
Back on the lake the next morning, Hector and Jack are going to go for a dive, do some more investigation. Kelly and Hank are there as well as another deputy. They don't know their name. Still, of course, nobody is properly working together. Egos are full stop in the fucking way. In the boat, it's quiet and still until the rope for the anchor, I believe, is suddenly yanked and dragged real hard across the lake. Kelly's knocked into the water by the force of it. Hank and the deputy are like, stay there, do not swim. Swimming will attract the creature croc. But then the engine also won't start. So the boat won't start. Kelly is stressed as fuck. It seems like something's coming up underneath her. Finally, the boat's engine gets its shit together. They get back to Kelly. Yelly? She does yell a lot. They get back to Kelly and yank her out of the water. And you think the croc is right underneath her, but it's really just Jack resurfacing. And I was like, why do you have to come up? Come on! Anyways, they all make it back into the boat. Fine, even Hector. But as the deputy is pulling up what I think is a sonar radar thing out of the water, the croc takes a flying leap out of the water and bites the deputy's head straight off. Kelly's standing right next to him, but her back is to where the crocodile takes a swan dive out of the water, so she technically doesn't see it, and I guess nobody else sees this happen or what it is, so they still are like, what the fuck was that? I mean, Hector is like, bitch, this is definitely a crocodile, but they don't have visual confirmation. Kelly's losing her mind. She's tired of the dead bodies and the heads and the toes. Back at the campsite, it's morbid chaos when a bear attacks. As this bear is attacking, the creature croc finally unveils itself and snatches the bear off of the lake shore. Croc's like, bitch, these are my human snacks. The fuck? To the bear. So he's like, I'll take your life for that bear.
Okay. I admit it. It's a crocodile.
The situation, it quickly is now upgraded, lawfully speaking. But between these scenes, we see Jack and Kelly starting to bond more, I guess. A little romance building. This is when you see Sheriff Hank and Hector watching this cute little croc killing animals on the shore of a body of water videos. And they start trying to figure out how the croc got there. Of course, still ego-butting.
I never heard of a crocodile crossing an ocean. Well, they conceal information like that in books.
All right, let him go.
I'm sick of him too. I do need to warn you, Sheriff. The thing about being rich, my parents would have the added luxury of ditching me off at karate school on a regular basis. So I am a brown belt. Go ahead, take your best shot.
No.
Hank. He said he knew karate. You hit him.
Kelly and Jack Fish Bill, yeah, like I just said, they're sort of at the same time building a little bit of a romance. But to be honest, I'm not going to focus much more on this at all because it bores me. I think it's just an opportunistic thing for them in a way because they seem to be attracted to one another. Kelly does let on about her situation, like why she's really there eventually to Jack because he doesn't stop fucking asking. So they're, I don't know, they seem to be kind of like endearing themselves to one another a bit here, but I find it boring. There's no spark there, at least that I don't detect. So it's just, I don't feel like the movie even really needs it, to be honest. The next day they're out on the helicopter. They're not sure when whoever they've called in, National Guard or something like that, Florida Fish and Wildlife, because, you know, that's their, crocs are their territory. So they're going to come up and, you know, help them. But they're not sure when they're going to get there. So they go out on Hector's helicopter and he takes them to the cove where he thinks the croc lives. Hector and one of the deputies, they stay on the copter while Hank, Kelly, and Jackfish Bill, they go on shore. They find a human head, presumably the deputies from the day before.
Oh, that is it! That is it!
I know, Kelly.
No! No, I keep getting hit with heads!
Try to calm down.
Right? You calm down!
Kelly's fucking had enough. And that's when they see through the brush and the clearing a little bit that Betty has blindfolded a cow and is leading it to the water's edge where Creature Croc is waiting for its cow meal. Guess it likes beef. I hate this. I don't like it because you see, I mean, it's all CGI and stuff, but I love the cows. They're just like big old dogs. Sheriff Hank, he confronts who I am now calling leader of the Crocs, Betty White. They find out she's been feeding it for 6 years. Hank asks her,
"Your husband, Bernie, you didn't by any chance lead him to the lake blindfolded?
If I had a dick, this is where I'd tell you to suck it."
All I have to say here is all hail Queen of the Crocs. This is what I'm talking about. Betty White's character is the absolute fucking best in this movie. No fucks given. She didn't report it because, you know, and I guess in her head, nobody else got hurt. She's like, it's really more of his lake now, referring to the crocodile. The sheriff puts the Croc Queen on house arrest. She calls him,
"Thank you, Officer Fuckmeat."
Officer Fuckmeat. I can't say it better than Betty White can. But anyways, I'm dead. So is her husband. Meanwhile, Hector, he goes diving again while all this is happening. And he comes face to face with the creature.
Oh my. Suddenly, I feel a bit foolish here. You're different from the others. Holy Spirit of Sobek. Holy Ghost. Holy shit.
Yo, okay, so Jackfish Bill is real fucking mad that Hector went swimming with the crocodile. Rightfully so, because there was a deputy on the copter.
That's your last little stunt, Mr. Crocodile. You're grounded.
This is some very delicate equipment that you're throwing around.
You trying to kill yourself? You want to meet your maker? Is that it?
I mean, yeah, he could have gotten killed. The other deputy could have gotten killed. They think that Hector must have a death wish. So we get this scene where Kelly comes to talk to Hector and she does actually seem to be trying to understand him. And honestly, I do love this moment between them.
Did you want to be killed by it?
You think I'm that nuts?
Hector. You just did. There had to be at least some sort of a death wish going on.
In ancient Melanesia, people suspected of crimes would be thrown to the crocodiles. Crocodiles would decide. They would be the judge.
Oh, and so that was you wanting to be judged out there?
Maybe I was, and so what? Is that too arbitrary? Better be measured by my wealth? Better for me to get my self-esteem looking in the eyes of cheap sycophants craving a meal ticket? There was more honesty in those dragon's eyes. There was more dignity in those dragon's eyes. There was more...
Hector, cut the shit.
Yeah, fuck it.
We learn that Florida Fish and Wildlife are finally on their way. They're going to be there in about 3 hours. And Hector is not happy about this. He knows they will kill the croc. And he is very, very persistent that they need to try to capture it, not kill it. He makes his case. And he does have a lot of good points. He's very passionate. I mean, honestly, Oliver Platt, he delivers this role really fucking well. And maybe it's not a hard role to play. I don't know. But he still smashes it. And I love him for it. They all go back and forth for a while, kind of arguing. Kelly is on Hector's side. Jackfish Bill and the sheriff are like, you're mad. You're absolutely mad. How the fuck are you going to capture it anyway? So Hector, he does get them to agree to give it a try. One try. They end up using one of Betty's cows as bait. She calls them all cocksuckers.
I knew it first. I just didn't want to say.
But anyways, they take this cow to lay their trap, and it's been set for a while. The cow's dangling from the helicopter with Hector maining it. And by nightfall, they're about to call it quits. Kelly says,
"She looks like a giant tea bag."
The cow looks like a giant tea bag, and she's all worried about it. And I love her for that, but it cracks me up when she's like, "It looks like a tea bag." Hector yells from the helicopter, his helicopter throne,
"Cow disappoints me."
Because the croc hasn't showed up. But then the croc does show up. Hector pulls up really sharply to raise the cow up, and the helicopter obviously narrowly saving the teabagged cow from the croc's jaws of snack time. From the shore, Hank takes his shot with the trank gun. It lands. We're good. We're good there at least. But the copter starts to spaz and ultimately crashes into the water. Guys, this cow is fine. After the movie ends and like with the credits, you do see like a shot of the cow just like walking by on the lake's shore. It's good. Thank God. Only one cow was fictionally harmed in this movie. Well, I guess fictionally murdered, be more accurate. The helicopter crashes. The croc is playing hide and seek with them. Hector, he's good, but it's still for a moment and they don't know where it is. A bunch of shit goes down. The croc, again, he's playing hide and seek, but then he comes on land. He goes after everyone, but he does go after Kelly, who ends up in the water. I kind of hate this, but she ends up in the water. And listen, the crocodile is blocking her from having a direct line of path back to shore. So she ends up swimming out instead towards Hector. Some shit goes down. She does make it to Hector. And then the croc comes flying through kind of the backside of the helicopter. Not the backside. The croc comes flying through the opposite side of the helicopter that they're standing on. You know how helicopters, they've got the, you know, obviously the cab, the pilot's seat. But then there's like the back where the two doors, they slide open. They're both open. And that's what the croc comes flying through. And essentially it traps itself. I don't know if I described that very well, but I hope you got what I was trying to put down for you. The 30-foot croc is now trapped. It's still like violently thrashing around. Hector is like, look, it's losing its fight. The trank is working, but Jack and Hank are back to wanting to kill this thing. So they argue about that for a little while. Eventually Jack's like, fuck this. And he does shoot at the croc again, but it turns out to be just another trank. And then it's time for a little croc nap. It seems to be calmed down. They seem to have it trapped. They're like, holy shit, I think we got this. Now we can make sure that Fish and Wildlife aren't gonna kill it. Hector, he's kind of standing in the water on the shore, so it's just at his feet, really. But then another gator comes up, not a gator, sorry, a croc comes up from behind him and does get hold of his ankle and drags him a little bit, but then Hank actually saves his life and he shoots the other croc. So yeah, that's basically the end. Not much more happens. Hector is taken off in the ambulance to the hospital and Hank ends up going with him. You get this quick clip of the EMT saying, hey, he needs someone to come with him. Jack and Kelly, you're standing there, but so is Hank. And you can tell that Kelly and Hank are like trying to look away and not make eye contact with Hector, which kind of just makes me sad. I like Hector. I mean, he's a dick at times and can be a bit of a pig, but anyways. So Hank ends up going with him and I'm like, look, they're friends. They're bros now. I love it. And then Kelly and Jack, they end up leaving together. Jack's like, let's go for a beer.
So does nobody ever make a move in Maine? That's it. You slide your duffel bag.
Just get in the truck and go for a beer. There's a good bar in town.
That's charming. Are the glasses clean?
Mostly.
And I don't know. Again, this whole thing, it's supposed to be like, they also found a romance after this creature feature disaster. But it's just, I don't know. It's very lackluster. I could have done without it, I guess. But it is what it is. But yeah, the very last scene of this movie is Betty White at her house. I'm a little confused why she's still there, because I thought they were going to arrest her, charge her with something. I don't know what, but something. She does kind of admit to letting the croc eat her husband. She didn't. So anyways, she's still at her house. She's walking out to the end of the little dock. It's on her property. And she sits down, rolls up her pant legs, or maybe she has a dress on, I don't know. And she sticks her toes in the water, and she's got a bag of sliced white bread, and she's ripping off clumps of bread and tossing it in the water to this little swarm of tiny baby crocs.
little buttons. Oh, oh, mommy loves you. Come on, get your supper. Nibble mommy's toes. Yes.
The end. You guys, we did a creature feature. This was so much fun. Again, I know this was a deterrent from my... Well, it's not really a deterrent because this isn't a movie that I loved growing up and it's a part of my past in that way. It's just not one of my heavy hitter past movie loves, I guess. I had a fun time with this. I bought it on DVD. You can watch it on YouTube, I believe. I should double check that. If you can watch it for free on YouTube, I will put it as a link in the show notes. If it's not there, that means it's not available to watch for free. Thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget to give the show a follow so you can get a cute little notification when my next episode is out. I am jumping back and forth between what I want to do next. September is upon us, which means October is around the corner. And there's some more like, I don't know, this time of year, spooky, whatever, witchy movies that I'm leaning towards. But I can't make a choice, so I don't want to say it. So anyways, it'll just be a surprise. Surprise! Again, thanks for listening. Until next time, my creatures. I kind of like that.
Until next time, creature features.
Okay, I want to be a creature too, though. I want to be an alligator. I want to be a black alligator with one vintage pink eye and one emerald green eye. Maybe some encrusted bejewels down my scales. I don't know. I don't eat meat though, so is there a plant-based diet for crocodiles? Probs not. Probs not. Anyways, okay, bye.
Come and get it!
Officer Fuckmeat.